Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. My name is Nate Klarfeld, and this is Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight I have Nils Terringer, a young filmmaker from the University of Central Florida. We'll call it UCF from now on, but for those people that are outside of Florida, the University of Central Florida is called UCF. Nils is a filmmaker, as I said. He has worked on several films, and he is about to start filming The Blue Flower, which we'll be talking about later. Good evening, Nils.
Hey, Nate. Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Okay, first question. When did you first decide that you were going to be the next Steven Spielberg?
Well, actually, it was 5 or so years ago. I was actually going to Florida Christian College, which is a small Bible college in Kissimmee, and I was going to be a youth minister at a church. That's what I was studying for. But I decided that I wanted to broaden my, voice in the Christian world, and I was going to be making the next Passion of the Christ. So I decided to go to UCF and become a Christian filmmaker.
And how did you, where did you go from there at UCF? Because your films, I've seen Castle Otis, and I've seen Out, and I'm excited about seeing The Blue Flower. Did I pronounce that right? Castle Otis?
Yeah, it's a Castle Otis, and it's a Blue Flower, yeah.
And The Blue Flower, okay. I'm always nervous about pronunciation. Okay, so how did you move from a Christian filmmaker to your film that was about your coming out?
Actually, I have to just credit the friends that I made at UCF, kind of transitioning from a really, really small 300 people Bible college to a huge university. I got to meet so many like crazy cool people, and one of them was one of my best friends, Erica, and she happened to be a Christian lesbian, and I was like, what on earth is that? So I met her and met some other people, and eventually just kind of realized I was gay myself, and kind of transitioned from being a Christian filmmaker to just being a filmmaker.
Good, good. Tell us about how you made that film, Castle Otis. It's an excellent, excellent film. It's available on YouTube. I'm going to put up a link on Facebook and after the show, and because my Facebook friends are to get to it. Tell us about what it felt like after you made that film. Because I saw it was a very, very powerful coming out statement. It's more than a statement, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's really sort of an invitation to just have everybody, whatever side of the issue you're on, as far as gay people are concerned, just kind of a call to unity, a call to just love each other. And it's really like the thing I'm most proud about. The proudest moment of my life was when I screened the film to like 300 people at UCF. But how I started making that film was taking a documentary class at UCF, and my professor was encouraging us to make really personal films instead of making films about just issues, to really like look inside yourself and see what you're really passionate about. So at the time I was in the closet and kind of scared about coming out and dealing with the ramifications of that. So I decided I wasn't going to make a personal film. I was going to go up to this castle in St. Augustine, Castle Otis, and interview the man who built the castle named Rusty. And he's a really cool man that I had met on a Christian college trip in the past, and just a really eclectic guy. And I was going to interview him about his choice to be sort of a monk and kind of bottle himself up in this castle and not really, go out and be a normal Christian. So I went up and interviewed him about that. And while I was up there, he happened to just kind of mention that he had built the castle for everyone, not just Christians, not just for one group of people, but he wanted to have the castle be a place of acceptance for all people. And he specifically mentioned people that were gay. And when I heard that, I just, my mouth dropped and I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, this is a sign. I need to, you know, drop what I'm doing and really make a personal film.
Okay, so that was the moment when you heard him say that this place was open and tolerant and welcoming for everyone, including gay and lesbians and all races and creeds, and that you felt it. Great, that sounds good.
It's a really scary choice, though. Still, even after that, it was, for me, you know, I'm kind of a shy guy, and for me to kind of make a film about, you know, the issues that I was dealing with at the time was just, like, really scary.
Mm-hmm. Do you think shy people go into film to express themselves because they don't shout it out like me? I'm a flaming faggot. I'm a flaming faggot. I didn't say it. I just said F. I said F. I'm 61 years old. Yeah, I didn't say it. I used that word like a normal word, and now I know it's a bad word. So I'm a flaming gay man. I didn't say it.
No, I mean, that's a good call. I mean, I think instead of being some, you know, preacher on the streets when I was first wanting to go a more Christian route, I decided to be a filmmaker because, you know, you can kind of hide behind your film.
Exactly.
But it's still, okay. Making a personal film is different because, you know, you actually have to kind of open up about yourself a lot more.
Right. And you said, I just wondered if shy people have a tendency to be writers and very creative and expressive people that can hide behind, not hide, I don't like the word hide, but that can reveal themselves. You're revealing yourself.
Yeah.
Bill. Yeah. That, I think I'm
much better
that.
Word. Yeah.
Okay. You're revealing yourself. And it is a wonderful. Well, tell us about the film Out.
Okay. Well, Out was my capstone film. You know, we all have to make at UCF, we have to make a under 15-minute film for our graduating thesis, you know, undergrad. So it was a pretty big deal, you know, for all of us. And so I decided to make a film that was really personal, which is just kind of what happened after I expressed to my parents that I wanted to come out. And that was that, you know, they wanted me to stay inside. So the film is a metaphor. It's a little boy who lives in a white room, and he wants to go outside, but his mother doesn't want him to.
Yeah, it's a great film. It really, and the white, you can see if you go on the show page for Stonewall Live, all you listeners, I've got a bunch of listeners, I've just checked my little out count here. If you go to the show page, you'll see a link to Out, and you'll also see one of the, I guess the cover or the cover picture that YouTube presents for Out, and it's a white room and a figure. So it's exactly what Nils talked about. How did your parents react to your coming out, starting out as a Christian college, then a Christian filmmaker, and then an out gay man as a filmmaker?
Yeah, I mean, they've always been extremely loving towards me, you know, supportive of my filmmaking. You know, I guess a lot of people, if they say, hey, I'm going to go be a film student, a lot of parents wouldn't be happy about that because it's a horrible way to make money, at least starting off. But they've always been really supportive of that part of me. But at the same time, you know, as soon as I came out, there was a huge sort of bridge that was broken and still hasn't really been repaired. Seems like we're on different planets almost. Their Christian world and my crazy progressive world.
Yeah, that's good. I'm giving you advice from an older gay man. Notice I didn't use the F word. I came from an Orthodox Jewish family, not dissimilar from yours. I started out in Hebrew day school, and I have relatives who are rabbis and cantors and wear black hats and things like that. And I can tell you that it's a process. It's a long process, but it's a beautiful journey, because if you're loving, true religious people, there's one day where I believe they come, and maybe you'll make a film about it someday. When your parents and your friend and your family that you look at in a different world realize that your world and their world are the same world.
Mm-hmm.
I experienced it, but as I said, it's a process. You're at the beginning of the journey, and it's great. It's a great journey.
Yeah, and I mean, at least at first I did, I feel like I felt sort of like I could feel sympathy for myself in some way for, you know, my parents not accepting me. But I really feel like it's been a really great process, because it's taught me, you know, exactly who I am and to really, you know, become who I know I am. And that would have never happened if my parents had just easily accepted me. You know, I had to dig deeper and really, really go to the core of who I was.
Nietzsche says, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger.
Yep.
Okay. Going back, I'm going to do a little plug for the Stonewall National Museum and Archives, who is not our sponsor, but that's who I work with. I've been a volunteer there for years. We have a UCF graduate as our development director, Brian Rabbit. I'm going to do a shout out to him. He's going to just kill me for that, for saying his name on the air. Anyway, I would love to have you as a guest in person at the library, at the Stonewall Museum and Archives, at the library and museum and archive, and it's everything in one. And show one of your films and talk about it. We have a young college group starting, of young gay men in college. We have several colleges down here in Fort Lauderdale, and I know they would love to see the movie out. I really do. I think it's a great movie. So
that'd be so exciting. I'd love to do that.
Okay, we'll talk about that later. Okay, we're going to go talk about your big project, A Blue Flower, Blau, yep. Bloom. I know I speak German.
I do not speak German.
Well, you saw my name. It's Klarfeld. It's a German name. It's a quest for healing. You're one of the subjects in the movie. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm actually transitioning to a point where I believe that I'm going to be possibly the main character. But really, the film is a quest for healing. And it's exploring the sort of strange, crazy world of alternative medicine. It's always been something that I've been really interested in. I think I might have invented the word organic, but I have a problem with my chest. It sort of caves inward. It's called pectus excavatum, and so it sort of looks like I've been punched in the chest, and it's always been something that I've been kind of conscientious about. It's nothing, you know, it's not like a horrible disease like cancer or HIV. But it's still something that I'm dealing with personally. And so I'm sort of on a quest now to see if I can heal my chest, my birth defect, with some form of alternative medicine. I've been told by my doctor that I could have a surgery for about $30,000 to have it actually physically, you know, elevated. But I really can't do that at this point, and I wouldn't do it anyways. That'd be too scary. So I'm sort of on this this quest to heal myself, but at the same time, I'm also interested in finding out what other people are doing to heal themselves of more serious diseases. So I hope to follow the lives of several people that are maybe have a hope for actually curing their disease, doing different things that maybe not a lot of people know about.
Well, how have you found your other subjects or stars in your film, A Blue Flower? How have you found these people?
Well, I haven't found them. That's the thing. I'm still in pre-production, and that's why I'm going to start with myself first. But I'm just kind of going to different alternative healthcare centers locally here in Orlando and seeing if any of them have patients that may be interested in participating in my film. But it's a very hard process to locate subjects for a film like this because it's such a personal issue.
Exactly.
And a lot of people are kind of scared to put themselves out there, and it takes so long to document the process. So that's why I'm going to start with myself and see where it goes from there.
Good. I'm going to share something personal with you, but I didn't share in our little chats before. I'm a stage 3 cancer survivor. 15 years ago, I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, Burkitt's lymphoma, stage type B, for those who know what that is. It's a very dangerous type of cancer. I was successfully treated at MD Anderson Hospital at the University of Texas in Houston. But they use something called complementary therapy, and I'm just going to share something with you here, and it really was amazing. They do not allow you to have your chemotherapy treatment, which is an incredibly nauseous, stomach wrenching. You can't even explain what it is, what it's like when it's dripping through your body. It's poison, basically. They do not allow you to have that in your room alone. No, not one patient in the entire Giants hospital. You have to go to something called the laughing room. Have you heard of that? The laughing room at Anderson?
No.
Most people haven't, because no one shares this with you, because you throw up and poop and all sorts of other things in there, and it's just a horrible experience. But you go into this room, and it's an arena. You sit in a Barca lounger. You have a nurse next to you. There's a TV screen in front of you. 16 years ago, it was a giant, you know, CRT in front of me, and you have this little remote in front of you. And while you're getting your 8 hours of poison thrown into you, you have to watch I Love Lucy, Abbott and Costello, The Three Stooges, Andy Griffith, all the old black and white movies, Beaver. And so I had 7 or 8 treatments and 2 transfusions in this laughing room, which was, you know, a total. The first time I was screaming. I said, "Don't take me there." But I found out that, you know, laughter is like an incredible, and they said they don't have to use pain pills or anti-emetics.
Wow.
I know, and they're the only place that does that. And this is 15 years ago, and I found out that they're still the only hospital that demands that you have your, you know, yucky treatment in this. Oh, and you have people next to you.
Oh my gosh, that's such an amazing example of, you know, like something that's hopeful in the midst of this horrible like tragedy. You know, you can have some laughter. And that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first time they do it, you're mad, and then the second time you do it, you go, okay, I'm going to do it, and then like by the third or fourth time, you're looking forward to it, because there is a little, you know, they always say if you smile, you feel better. But, you know, there's nothing to smile about when you're having cancer and they tell you you're going to die anyway. But I did want to share that with you, that I am a stage 3. Stage 3 means, stage 4 is just palliative therapy before you die. So I had cancer in 3 places. It had spread. I was a success. Evidently, here I am, you know, chatting with you tonight. But, yeah, I've been through what some of your subjects have gone through, but not, I did not do alternative medicine. I did something called complementary medicine, it's a completely different world, but it does. You know, I read your thing that it's not about quackery; it's about faith. And how's your faith?
Well, I mean, it's faith is. I don't know. Faith is so easily misunderstood. I come from a Christian background where, you know, faith is used in a different context. What I really mean to say is hope. It's really about hope, because I know that sometimes when people get a disease, they just give up hope, and, you know, they kind of lose their drive to survive, to live, to thrive, and get better. And so, I mean, I really wanted to focus my film on people that haven't given up hope, and they are doing things to help themselves heal. I mean, that's really what my film's about.
What was your why about making the film? Why did you make this film? Why do you want to make this film? Excuse me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it's sort of more complicated than I'll make it seem here, but it's really, I had a disease called hypothyroidism. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with that last year, and my doctor told me that I would have to take prescription medication possibly for the rest of my life, and I would have to like rely on that to regulate my body temperature and my weight, things like that. And so that really scared me, and I started taking the medication. But after a few months, I kind of was like, wait, why am I doing this? Like, you know, isn't there a reason why I have this? So I started kind of doing my own research, and I went to a naturopathic doctor and was put on iodine supplements, and was told that possibly the reason why my thyroid was kind of acting weird is because my body had too much fluoride in it. So I'm on a sort of personal quest to heal my own body of different things, and I guess that's what sort of drove me to look into alternative medicine more deeply than I had ever before.
Good, good. So it was a personal question. And have you been successful in treating your hypothyroidism with your diet and intake?
Yeah, well, I just got tested last week, not by a traditional doctor, so I still have to go to get a blood test to confirm this, but really exciting to hear that according to the alternative tests, my thyroid is back to normal, so I'm really excited about that.
Great, great. Congratulations. I do believe that our toxins and heavy metals, which fluoride is a heavy metal, are really pretty dangerous.
Yeah. But I did want to tell you about a really interesting character that I am following. He's not probably one of my main characters, but his name is Joe, and he lives up in Georgia, and he has osteoporosis, and he's just not in very good shape right now. But he's doing something that I think is really cool, but most people think is really crazy. I just want to tell you about it. He's actually trying to heal himself by making what's called the Philosopher's Stone. Have you heard of this?
Yes, I have. I believe in it. I'm one of those people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You've reached a very I'm a very, very astro like, you know, what the bleep do we know person, you know.
Yeah. Well, so Joe is up in these mountains in Georgia trying to concoct the Philosopher's Stone. He thinks he has the recipe for it, and basically for people who don't know what it is, it's a substance that alchemists have been trying throughout history to develop. One of the things that it can do is transmute lead into gold, but
correct.
The less commonly known aspect of it is that if you ingest a few drops of it, your body will become immortal and you'll be
correct.
Completely healed of any physical ailments. So he's up there trying to make the Philosopher's Stone. I'm going to be following his journey to see if he's successful.
Yeah, I have read about it, but I do believe in the field. I believe in magnetic fields. I believe that we communicate on another level with animate and inanimate objects. I know I'm crazy, but maybe I'm not crazy, but, you know, because here I am and I'm a survivor of cancer. So I do believe what you're talking about. This man, I think, may not be crazy. I mean, I think this man has transcended to, you know, he's left... You know, he's out of the box, but the people out of the box are the ones.
Definitely.
But they're the ones who
do breakthroughs.
I mean, the people out of the box make the breakthroughs.
Yeah, I mean, he's so far out on left field that it's, you know, it's crazy to even talk about it actually working. But really, my film isn't about whether it works or not. It's about the fact that he's not sitting on his butt, not doing anything about his disease. He's actually trying to, you know, help himself and other people in his own way. Whether it's crazy or not, he has hope. So that, I guess that's what the blue flower is about.
I don't think we're going to use the word. Let's stop using the word crazy. Let's use the word unique.
Yeah, or different. Yeah.
It's unique because I don't believe there's any wrong treatment. And you talked about faith earlier and belief and hope. This is giving him hope, and the power of hope, I believe, is so strong.
Yeah.
Yes.
Amen.
Okay, oh no, amen. Can I hear an amen? Anyway, I'm going to go back to the blue flower. Okay, is that all right with you?
That's great.
Okay, great. So, how do you raise money for this?
Well, most people that are making films try to find investors, and that's one way to do it. But at UCF, we're taught this kind of unique way of raising money, which is called crowdsourcing. And that's where you basically find all of your money through donations, but you provide incentives for people to donate. So, for example, if somebody would donate $1 to the film, maybe they would get their name listed on the website for the film, you know, as like a special thank you, or, you know, a discount for the DVD, or, you know, some way to feel like they're participating in making the film.
Yes.
So that's how I'm going to try to raise money for my film is through donations. And I actually have a partnership with a fiscal sponsor to where any money that's donated is tax deductible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more of an incentive for people to donate.
Well, let me give you your plug right now. It's www.ablueflower.com. If you click on donate, you will see the levels of support. You can be the executive producer for $25,000, and you'll get your name on there, one name with title on Scream at a Time. Associate producer for $10,000. I'm going through this. You never know who wants to do this. Assistant producer, $5,000. Generous supporter, $1,000. And you'll take any amount of money. Is that correct?
If anybody gives me money, I will give them a huge hug.
Okay, good. It was cyber hug because you don't know where they are.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me do that one more time. www.ablueflower.com, and you can click on About, and after you click on About and get so excited, I want you all to click on Donate. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can click on Donate, and it's really easy. You can even use a credit card. So.
Right.
You're not able to donate, it would be awesome if people can follow me on Twitter and Facebook and start joining the conversation, because that's really why I'm making this film, is to get people talking and sort of bring the issue out of the dark.
How do you get into a film festival? I notice your other films have been in some film festivals. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, it's not really that hard to submit. You just contact the festival directly, or you can use a website called withoutabox.com. And the hard part is actually getting in, because festivals, especially the bigger ones, get so many submissions. One of the films that I produced, Broken Records, got into Slam Dance, which is a film festival that takes place at the same time and place as Sundance in Park City, Utah. And that festival had over 5,000 other films, other short films that submitted in 2010. So we were really, really fortunate to get in because it's such a high selection process.
Right, it is. I know I'm active with the Miami Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. I was the board chair of Fort Lauderdale, of the Stonewall Library, and we were always asked, because we're a gay cultural organization and there's so few of us, that I have been involved with that, and they just get an incredible number of entries. So I wanted to know how you got in. Obviously, it was quality. It was quality, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. No, okay. Sometimes you just get lucky because maybe the programmers are looking for a certain thing that year, or, for their specific program, and maybe our film just happened to fit that. So you never know.
I do see A Blue Flower as a very, very exciting film, and I wish you luck with that. We have 2 minutes remaining, which is, do you believe this half hour went by so fast? I can't believe it.
Nope.
And you were a little nervous, because this is, can I tell the audience the truth?
Go ahead.
This is his first radio interview. He's going to have thousands more. I'm just going to save this forever. It's going to be archived on online, and you can download the MP3. You've got the next thing. What do you want to say to the world right now? You've got the floor.
Well, I guess I'd just say whatever life you're at, whatever struggles you're going through, just don't give up hope. And keep looking for the blue flower.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. I just want you to know that this is being archived. Tell your friends to go to www.blogtalkradio.com/StonewallLive, one word. You can click the link, send it to your friends. It'll be on this website for the next 3 years. That's the deal I have with Google, who owns this website. And please download this, save it. Nils, thank you so much. You have been great tonight. And I'm going to say good night from Fort Lauderdale. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Nate. Good night.
Good night.